Who are we becoming? Well, now here we come to the foot of Mount Sinai. So the Israelites have been delivered from slavery. They're out in the wilderness. Moses has gone up on the mountain. Go back and listen to last week if you want to hear all that was happening, this theophanic glory cloud that descends. And then we're given the Ten Commandments. But what is a follower of Jesus supposed to do with the Old Testament law? If you're following Jesus, what do you do about the Big Ten, if you will? Well, what I'd like to do is give us today a framework for understanding the Ten Commandments. What does a disciple do with the Ten Commandments? We don't go back to Mount Sinai and get under the oppressive yoke of trying to earn God's love or God's favor. So what's the purpose of the Ten Commandments? Can we just dismiss them? Well, they're obviously significant, but what's the role? So what I'd like to do today is give us that framework by dipping our toes in the first commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods." Don't worry, I'm not going to slight the first commandment because the first one and the second one go together so well. Thou shalt have no other gods and thou shalt have no idols. Those go like almost hand in hand. In fact, some people in Jewish traditions will take them together. So don't worry, we'll get more and deeper into it next week about not having idols, not having other gods. But for today, the framework, and we're going to use no other gods to help us understand. Let me give you three questions that will guide our discussion this morning. Question one, what can the law do? Question two, what the law can't do? And then question three, what are we going to do? All right, got it? What the law can do, what the Ten Commandments can do, what the Ten Commandments cannot do for you, and then, well, what are we going to do as disciples of Jesus? Ready? Let's jump in. I'm really excited about this sermon series, but I get excited about a lot of things, so. First, what the law can do. It can expose your need for God. The law will show you your sin. If you pull out the Ten Commandments and you honestly read the Ten Commandments and you go through it and you're vulnerable with yourself and honest before God, you will know that you fall short of God's holy standard. As a pastor, I kind of go through life collecting different illustrations. And I collected this illustration thinking, I don't know when I'm ever going to use that, but I'll hold on to it just in case. And then today rolled around. Here's the illustration. Social media, a funeral home puts out an advertisement on social media for, if you enter, you can win a free cremation. I'm not kidding. I'm like, this is get the popcorn, right? Like, where is this going to go? Well, sure enough, sweet little old lady enters in. She wins a free cremation. They bring her down. They take her picture, and she's holding a certificate. Her own cremation services, and she's smiling. Like, okay, but you got to read the comment section, right? First comment. Some people have all the luck. Second comment. I wonder if you can choose anyone to cremate, or do you have to use it yourself? But the comment that takes the cake. I hate it when you have to expire before the gift certificate can expire. What a gift about death. The law, what a gift. But it really reminds us, for the wages of sin is death. Oh, what a wonderful gift you've given us, Lord, only to help me see that I do not measure up. God is holy and I am unholy. What the law can do is it can point out your sin. John Calvin, the great reformer and really kind of the pioneer of Presbyterianism, we're here because of John Calvin. He had three uses for the law. We'll touch on all three, but for this first question, The first use of the law was it convicts us of our sin. The first two uses are both negative. It's the third one that's positive. But the first one is it convicts us of our sin. So you said, I said we're going to dip our toes in the commandment, the first commandment. How does it show this? Well, let's apply it to the first commandment, that it exposes our sin. You shall have no other gods. John Calvin also said that our hearts are idol factories, that we perpetually forge idols. We are so good at following false gods. We come by it honestly. Our great, 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 great grandparents, Adam and Eve, what was the first commandment that they broke? They wanted to be like God. Now you may be thinking, I don't know, Pastor, worshiping other gods, that sounds kind of silly. I don't have little idols, little statues. That seems kind of archaic. Well, let me ask some probing questions about this first commandment. Is there anything that if you lost it, it would make life not worth living? Is there anything in your life more important than God? Think about it this way. Is there something that absorbs your heart? Is there something that just grabs your imagination and does not let go? You obsess over it. Is there anything that you seek to give to you what only God is supposed to give? Let me drill down on this. Where do you find your identity? Do you find it in what people say about you, the things that you have, your status, your family, your accomplishments? That's an idol. God is the one who gives us our identity. You are my beloved. Is there anything that you look to for security outside of God? Oh, yeah, I trust God, but I really need the bank account to look a certain way for me to really be at peace. Think about what angers you or controls you, what gets you all spun up. This is the one where you're like, no, I'm still checking out good. I'm still, if you're not, this one. Is there anything, even a good thing, that has become an ultimate thing for you? That is a false god. Children can be a false god. Family time can be a false god. Wanting children, not wanting children, my independence, a hobby, work, any of things, even good things, when they become an ultimate thing, we're putting our confidence in that. We're putting our trust in that. You were made to worship. You're going to worship. What God is saying is, you're meant to worship me. So this first commandment is pointing out that Timothy breaks things and breaks relationships because I run to places and I put my trust, my confidence, and my love is all disordered. Even an atheist breaks the first commandment. They think that they don't believe in God, but they actually find security in their knowledge and their certainty that God doesn't exist. What does the law do? The law shows us that we're sinners. Here's the thing, my second point, the news doesn't get any better yet. Because you know what the law can't do? It can't save you. You know that person, like you just can't stand that person that shows up at the meeting, right? And they point out the problem, and then they don't point out the solution. Like, come on. At least try to. It's like the law points out your sin, and then, oh, BT-dub, it doesn't save you either. It can't. Here's why. Rules can't change hearts. You know this truth. It's true on every employee break room refrigerator. Think of all the rules that get posted on the refrigerator. Don't eat Jim's sandwich. Right? And you open it, and there's Jim's half-eaten sandwich. Right? And there's a rule on the refrigerator. Don't leave things over 2 weeks, and you open it, and there's moldy yogurt, right? And then, like, the rules that some people will put on refrigerators, like, don't, like, somebody did it, I guess, you know, don't store your kid's science experiment in the refrigerator. There's a petri dish. What are we doing, people? What we're showing is that it doesn't matter if there are rules. Rules don't change hearts. Rules don't get to the issue. You see, the law points out that we're sinners, but then it shows that it can't save because a rule won't change my insides. When I was in high school, my preacher growing up went through the Ten Commandments, and I'll never forget the very provocative sermon title he had. Are you ready for this one? His sermon title was, Why We Should Take Down the Ten Commandments. I was like, oh, he's going to be getting some emails on Monday. But then he made the point, and I agree with him. They need to be taken down in our hearts. The love of God, it doesn't matter if it's on the courtroom walls or the classroom walls, if it's not inside of us. You see, Calvin had the second use of the law. The second use of the law is that it can restrain evil actions of those who might fear punishment. But listen to that. It's still a negative use. You're just trying to get people to obey out of fear of punishment. Well, fear doesn't lead to lasting transformation. At best, you get grudging compliance. Stephen Colbert recently was interviewing a politician. I'm not going to name the politician. But this was a politician who wanted the Ten Commandments up. And so in his snarky fashion, he said, well, name the Ten Commandments. The politician said, you want me to name them? Yeah. And he hemmed and hawed and said, don't murder and don't lie. And Stephen Colbert goes, one, two. He couldn't do it. I'm not going to ask if you could do it. Let's take a moment here and just recognize that we keep electing people, right and left, who not only do they not have a head knowledge of the Ten Commandments, there's no moral heart knowledge either. And let me just say it, like poke the elephant in the room or the bear, whatever it is, that for the next several months, these are the people who are going to tell you what's wrong with the world. And these are the people that are going to tell you what's wrong with the other person, and that they're the ones that know how to fix it. Now, let me be clear. I am not a Christian nationalist. I condemn Christian nationalism as a false idol. We'll maybe get to that later. I simply want to say it doesn't matter what's on the walls if it's not in hearts. And the law by itself cannot change a heart. This is what Jeremiah 31 was all about. If you want to go look this one up later, write it down in the margin. Jeremiah 31, starting with verse 31. This is so central because God is talking to the Israelites and saying, "Don't, Sinai isn't going to save you. You broke the covenant. What you're going to need is a new covenant." This is what he says. "I will put my law within them. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord, for I will forgive their iniquity and remember their sin no more." We need a heart transformation. It's what the poem says. To run and walk, the law commands, but it gives us neither feet nor hands. But better news the gospel brings. It bids us fly, and it gives me wings. Think about that. All the law can do is say, do this, do this, do this. But then it won't give us the resources to do it. The good news of the gospel is it says, go soar, and here are your wings. So here's what we're going to do. What the law will do, it'll show you your sin. What it won't do is it won't transform your heart. And so what we will do, all summer long, all Ten Commandments, we are going to run to Jesus Christ and find our wings. For every single one of the Ten Commandments, we will run to Jesus Christ, for he alone rescues, he alone saves, he alone is the one who can reorient our loves. I said it last week, I'll say it again this week. We don't go to Mount Sinai. We go to Mount Zion, where Jesus Christ was crucified. And on that cross, what you're going to see is a love that will melt your heart. To behold Jesus Christ, Bo mentioned it earlier in his prayer. We love because Christ first loved us. If you aim your heart at the Ten Commandments, you will fail miserably. But if you aim your heart at Jesus Christ and adore him and behold his love, that love will transform you. If I had a glass of hot water right here, I take a tea bag and I put it down in the water, what happens? Gradually, over time, the color will start to change. And then the scent will start to change. And in just the right amount of time, I will no longer have hot water. I have something totally different. I have tea. Friends, you don't go for the fire and the smoke on Mount Sinai. Go for the fire and the smoke that descends on the people of God at Pentecost, that comes to transform us, to give us a new heart. And then, maybe then, take a look at your life. After walking with Jesus in love, look at your life, and you'll go, oh, I'm kind of walking in the way of the Ten Commandments. This was Calvin's third use of the law. Not to earn your salvation, but beholding Jesus Christ and the salvation that he gives to us, I now can walk in freedom and in gratitude. And I want to love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I want to love my neighbor as myself. Do those two things as you walk with Jesus, and you've just fulfilled all the vertical commandments and all the horizontal commandments. We love because he loved us first. So what we're going to do, who are we going to become as we study the Ten Commandments? My prayer is that we behold Jesus Christ and we begin to walk in love. We are people who walk in love. I'll close with this illustration or story. Sometimes it's good just to invite you into my own spiritual journey. I have a spiritual director at Mepkin, at Mepkin Abbey. His name is Father Kevin. And I remember early on in our relationship, I shared with him some of the idolatry that I was struggling with. That I wanted people to like me. I wanted to do well. I wanted to achieve. And I felt myself like just scrambling, trying to get favor, trying to earn, trying to be accepted, trying to be loved. And I felt myself, I'm like grabbing onto all these things. And Father Kevin has this way of just sitting in a chair right there. He's like, you're like this. You cannot receive the love of God with clenched fists. He said, empty your hands, put it down, and then pray this prayer. He was like, empty your hands and pray this prayer. And I started praying this prayer. Now, this prayer is rooted in Ephesians chapter 3. Ephesians 3 says that we would, okay, the love of God, you can't measure it, right? Like, that's what Ephesians 3, like how wide, how long, how high, how deep. You cannot know the love of God. And he invited me into this prayer that I've tried to pray. I even pray it again this morning. So you empty your hands, and you can do this. We can do it now. Well, yeah, let's do it now. But here's the prayer, and then we'll pray it. The prayer is, enlarge my heart, Lord, that I might receive the abundance of your love. As if our heart could just keep growing and growing, that love can be poured out. So let's close with this prayer. Enlarge my heart, O Lord, that I might receive the abundance of your love. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.